Good morning. It's one of my favorite things right here is to get to welcome all of you on Sunday morning. So great to see all of you. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving and now are getting excited as we transition with a little help from God toward Christmas with all that beautiful snow out there. So great to have you here. And those of you watching online, also glad to have you as well. Well, we're finishing up the series titled Sharing Hope today. You know, for the last 4 weekends, we've been talking about the hope that we have in Christ, the hope of the gospel, and how we can share it. We are called to share it with the world, whether it's on a personal level, it's where we live, where we work, and where we play. And we've been talking a lot about that, but today I want to kind of end it with talking about the hope for our city, for our community. Because, you know, if we're going to reach our world, if we're going to reach our nation, it starts right here where we live, you know. And I have loved, over the last 10 or 12 years, how we've grown in the area of global missions. And I think that's critically important. But if we fail to reach our community, we have failed at the heart of our Great Commission, because this is our mission field, primarily mission field. Our primary mission field is right here. And what I want to talk about today is kind of one of those, maybe the biggest paradox of Christianity, the kind of the thing that seems so upside down and so backwards. But we're going to talk about how do we go about sharing that. And we're going to look at the first 8 verses of Acts chapter 8. And we're going to, I want to set the scene a little bit for you. Chapter 7 in Acts is about the first martyr, martyrdom that took place in Christianity. It was Stephen. And the Apostle Paul, which at that time was called Saul before his conversion, was heading it up. I mean, he was the chief persecutor of the Christian church. And I think something happened in Paul's heart the day he saw Stephen die and the way he faced his own death, looking up into heaven, seeing Christ, and dying with joy. And I think it absolutely wrecked Paul. And you know, when the Holy Spirit begins to work on you and begins to convict you oftentimes, you run hardest and fastest and longest away from him. You just try to get away from him, or you do the opposite, as you resist as long as you can until you can resist no longer. And then what we also see is another paradox happening. It was through the martyrdom of Stephen and the persecution of the church in Jerusalem that God, he used that terrible period to expand the reach of the church so that it became a global movement. And that's what we're going to look at today is we're going to look at basically 3 things about what it means to share our hope with the city, with our community. And we're going to look at what it means to be a movement, what it means to live a life on mission, and then thirdly, how to live a missional life following the model of the gospel. And this is where the paradox really comes in, how God has often used the things that we would never use to do the things that we would never do. So let's begin by looking at what it means to be a movement. And we're going to look at the first 4 verses of Acts chapter 8, if you'd like to follow along. Saul was one of the witnesses. He was talking about, he's referring now here to Stephen's death. And he agreed completely with the killing of Stephen. A great wave of persecution began that day, sweeping over the church in Jerusalem. And all the believers except the apostles were scattered through the regions of Judea and Samaria. Some devout men came and buried Stephen with great mourning. But Saul was going everywhere to destroy the church. He went from house to house, dragging out both men and women to throw them into prison. But the believers who were scattered preached the good news about Jesus wherever they went. You see, this is one of those situations where the Christians in Jerusalem were getting along rather well. They had the apostles teaching them, and the apostles were kind of like celebrity pastors. I mean, they were anointed by God, called separately to stand out, to build his church. And man, they were preaching the gospel like nobody else could. And so, of course, everybody wanted to stay there. The body was growing. You read in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4. I mean, it was growing by hundreds and thousands of people daily. I mean, they were sharing everything they had in common. And who would want to leave that? But because God knows our hearts, he knew that he needed to do something for this movement of the gospel to become a global movement. And so he allowed this persecution to take place to push them out of their comfort zone, push them out of their community, and to spread them throughout the entire world. And this is what he's doing today. And you see, I think this is really an interesting thing because, you know, I think we look sometimes at COVID and we think, you know, as bad as COVID was and as many stressful things that have come out of COVID and as much as we never want to go back to that again. And many of us thought the church is doomed. What are we going to do? We can't meet together. It's not safe. And many churches have closed as a response to that. But I began to see something a little different that came out of something that was, let's not call it good, it was really hard and really difficult and an awful period of our history. But I think what God began to do is he began to sift the church and he began to challenge all of us to go, are we too comfortable? Do we just like going to this church and being with our friends and we like all the programs? Or are we serious about this movement that Jesus died and rose from the dead in order to start and empower by ascending to the Father in heaven and sending back to us his Spirit to equip and empower us to go out into the world and live a life on mission? And I think God has always historically used difficult things to do what we would never on our own do. And I think that what it began to show us way back here in Jerusalem is that church is not a place. Church is a movement of people empowered by the Spirit of God to go into where their world, where they live, where they work, and where they play, to share the hope of the gospel, which is really the only hope that the world has. And so that's what we want to talk about today and even how it works in our world. I mean, you know, you could look at church history and you could say, man, it was rough going for the church in the first three centuries. A lot of persecution, a lot of martyrdom. I mean, with Stephen, that was just the beginning. And if you read the Book of Martyrs, I mean, throughout history, people have died for their faith. And about the third or fourth century in Rome, Constantine the Emperor, who was the leader over most of the modern world at that time, decided that he was going to make Christianity the religion of the law, the nation, the religion of Rome. And he completely screwed it up. I mean, you'd think if you were a Christian back then, you'd think, this is great. I don't have to worry about getting martyred. I don't have to worry about getting arrested. And what seemed like good news actually turned into something very, very bad because I don't think we've ever completely recovered from this notion that church is a place you go to. It's a building at a certain address where you gather on Sunday mornings. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very good thing that we're here together. But if it stops here, it's nothing more than a mere institution. And I think, have you ever noticed, and like, I remember the churches I grew up in, which weren't many, but when I go with my grandmother, I always thought the church had a unique smell to it. It smelled like paper, like the Bible. And my grandma, because she was the only one I went to church with. But I mean, have you ever noticed how sometimes church buildings, now we smell like coffee and little children's diapers because we have a lot of that going on around here, but a lot of churches, they smell like museums or they smell like libraries. It's because they've kind of become that. And that's not at all God's design for his church. It's to be a movement that is alive and thriving. You see, God needed to use the persecution that took place in Jerusalem to move his church out. And this is why I wanted to put this slide up on the screen this morning to kind of talk about why we're doing all this. God never comes in without sending us out. God never comes into our lives without sending us out or wanting to send us out. And even if we look at our mission statement, which has been on the wall the last 4 weeks, we are growing deeper in our relationship with Christ. And if we stop there, it's a good thing, but it's not the best thing. Because if all we're doing is growing in our relationship with Christ, and many churches, they kind of do that. It's like, man, we know the Bible. We can win Bible quizzes. We memorize scripture, all good things. But if it stops there, it begins to stink. And I'll tell you why in just a second. But we are growing deeper in our relationship with Christ so that we can go out into the world and share the hope of the gospel. If, in fact, we believe that when Christ came into us, living water came into us, we know that when living water stops flowing, it becomes stagnant, starts to stink, and it's no good to drink. If this living water is not constantly flowing out of us, where we live, where we work, and where we play, we become stagnant. And we become stinky to the world, actually. And that's called religion. You see, we're called to be a movement. In an institution, the leaders are the ones who are on mission. In a movement, everybody owns the mission. Everybody. And I think one of my fears has always been that one day WCC would become a grown-up, a sensible, respectable church, and we would become an institution. And I think we have to fight that always. You know, we just celebrated 30 years, and it's pretty easy to get comfortable with the fact that I like coming to this place, and I like the programs, and I like the preaching, and I like being with my friends, and it's comfortable to me, and it's a good place to invite my friends. But if we don't do anything with what we are learning and experiencing when we come together, when we're out in the world, we are failing at living on the mission that God died to put us on. And this has been something we've been stressing for the last few weeks, you know, how important it is. Those of us who have experienced the living presence of the living God. I talked about this a few weeks ago. What happened to us when we became born again Christians? A new birth, a new identity, a new nature, this new truth, this new reality that inhabits us called the hope of the gospel that needs to come out. But that's when we get a little freaked out and go, That's where I lock up. I mean, I don't know, you know, but I'm just going to tell you right now. There's nothing that will encourage you and strengthen your faith. Nothing. Like sharing the hope of the gospel with somebody in your sphere of influence that desperately needs to hear it, whether they accept it or not. For you to share that. Now, some of you are going, well, yeah, but that's where I freak out. Well, we'll get to that in just a second. But let's move on to the second thing that I think we see in this text, and that's verses 4-8. We looked at, you know, what it means to be a movement, and now I want us to look at what it means to live a life on mission. Let's look at verses 4-8 together. But the believers who were scattered preached the good news about Jesus wherever they went. Philip, for example, went to the city of Samaria and told the people there about the Messiah. Crowds listened intently to Philip because they were eager to hear his message and see the miraculous signs he did. Many evil spirits were cast out, screaming as they left their victims, and many who had been paralyzed or lame were healed. So there was great joy in the city. Whenever we live life on mission, as a movement, as the body of Christ, it ought to bring great joy to our cities, great joy to our communities. I talked about this a few months ago, and I don't even remember the context, but the hope that we have to share with our community is this thing called shalom, which means peace. It doesn't mean like absence of conflict. It means I want what's best for you. And that's one of the unique characteristics of Christianity. Even for people who don't agree with us, don't believe what we believe, who don't even like us, who are actually mean to us. One of the unique aspects of the gospel is we are still called, first and foremost, to lead them to Christ. But even if they don't accept Christ, we're still called to make their lives better. Therein lies one of the most powerful tools we have. I'll get to that in just a second here. But we have influence. I mean, I think about the fact that if you're going to reach a nation, you got to start with the community you live in. I mean, as I look out over the crowd here in this service, and I said the same thing in the last service, I doubt that there is a sector of our community, of our county, that is not represented here right now. The marketplace, education, the medical community, law enforcement, government, the list goes on and on. And for those of you I'm leaving out, please just understand I don't have time to talk about all of you, but I bet every aspect of our community is represented here, which means we have influence, we have the opportunity, we have the credibility to share the hope of the gospel. And this is very, very important. And there are three marks of a life on mission. When you're living out there on mission, the first one is the word is shared. I mean, you look, Philip proclaimed, he preached the good news. To me, that's the key, preaching the good news. Now you're going, yes, that's where I get hung up. I mean, I don't have seminary training. I don't know the Bible all that well. I'm an introvert. I mean, Denny, it's easy for you to stand up there. You know, you have a seminary degree. You're a preacher. You're used to it. You're extroverted. Wait a minute. Listen, I'm not talking about preaching the gospel like I'm preaching the gospel today. The gospel that you have to preach is the same one that Philip had. They didn't have a Bible back then. They had the Old Testament, part of it. They didn't have the Bible. So what does it mean they preached the good news? The good news is the fact that Jesus died for your sins, rose on the third day, ascended to the Father in heaven, and came back through his Spirit to live in you. You have that good news living in you. Just share that where you live, work, and play with the people that you know, the people you have an audience with, the people you have credibility with. And if they ask you hard questions, do what I do. Say, I don't know. It's okay. They want to know what's happened to you. You know, when you're living a life on mission, it always involves sharing the good news. Man, I remember as a brand new believer, I knew there was Genesis and I knew there was Revelation. I didn't know much about everything that was in between. I didn't grow up in Sunday school. I didn't grow up in church. But I would share the gospel with anybody and everybody, whether they wanted to hear it or not. I would share the good news of the gospel. I would share what Jesus had done in my life. Now, I probably should have toned it down a little bit, probably should have been locked up for a few months just to kind of chill out, but I couldn't help it. I could not believe the good news of what had happened in my life that I wanted to share with God. Now, some of you are going, well, yeah, but I grew up in church. I've always been a good person. I wasn't bad like you. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. Well, I don't really have a testimony. I beg to differ. You have a better testimony of God's goodness in your life. So life on mission always involves sharing the good news. Secondly, it involves our actions, how we respond. I mean, you know, you read in this text that there were all kinds of healings and miracles, and that gets a little tricky in our world today. I don't really know why there aren't as many. Some would say, well, because I don't even get into that argument. But the fact is their actions spoke very loudly to the world around them in a very, very redemptive and positive way. The way they loved each other, the way they loved the community, the way they were generous. I mean, you look at Acts chapter 4, they all shared everything in common. That was unheard of in that world. So their actions. And then life on mission is always involves shalom, which is another way of saying social justice or racial reconciliation. And I think that the book of Acts is a great example of how people who hated one another loved one another. How the Jews reached out to the Gentiles and invited them to be a part of the church because of Jesus. The way they responded, the way they reacted. You see, the Bible is full of radical social justice and care for the least. You know, if you look at the early church, think about the early church in Rome. Let's start there. In Rome, if a child was born with a disability of some kind, they were cast out as considered to be just not worth it. Or if you were poor, or you were just considered to be cursed by the gods. And so these people were ignored. They were left alone, orphans, vulnerable children. They were just put out to just die. The Romans wouldn't even take care of their own. Who took care of them? The people that the Romans were killing and imprisoning, the Christians. And you know, with all the bad rap that Christians get sometimes today, some of it's deserved. We did create hospitals. We did create orphanages. We did create a social care system. That's a good thing. And the Romans just could not understand why would these people who we're making their lives miserable, but they're caring for our people. And that began to change the way they thought about everything. You see, the early church, this is what it was built on. This has been what God has used for centuries. He's used our reaction to circumstances in a way that is contrary to the world, way the world responds. And we've got to keep doing that today because we too often get swept up in all the hysteria and the craziness of our culture, and we become guilty of trying to solve things in a human way. You know, I think about, I was watching the Ohio State football game, Ohio State and Michigan, and I'm really happy. I've grown spiritually. I didn't cuss one time during the game. As an Ohio State fan, it was difficult, but I did it. Thought I'd share that. I don't know why. My point is this. There was a commercial that came on several times during the game about how anti-Semitism, which is basically a hate crime against Jews, has increased in the last 2 months over 300% in our culture. And I find it to be heartbreaking and fascinating at the same time that people who 3 months ago would have called anti-Semitism a hate crime are now guilty of it, namely so many in the media and in Hollywood. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I've read the story. Why am I surprised? Why are we surprised? Because as human beings in our fallen nature, we are at war with one another, and that's exactly what the enemy of our souls wants us to be. He wants us to look at each other as the enemy because of our ethnicity or our religion or some other thing. And he divides us over that, or politics, or whatever you want. Just pick a number of things. We are at war with one another. We look at each other as the enemy, and that's exactly what the enemy wants us to do. And all of us in this tense time we live in, we want to do something, right? I mean, we got to do something. Because the world's just on fire right now, and we got to do something, right? Yeah, we do need to do something. You know what it is? We need to pray. And we need to do what the gospel says to do. Because here's the thing. Has violence ever ultimately solved anything? Sometimes it's necessary. But violence never ultimately solves anything. We can't legislate morality. We can legislate bad behavior, but we can't change a person's heart with all the good laws in the world. That's why we have to understand what the early church understood. We are in a spiritual war. And if we fight a spiritual war with human means, we will lose. If we don't lead with the love of Jesus Christ, I mean, think about it. I think for many Christians in our world right now, Jesus was way too weak. He taught things like loving your enemies. I mean, come on, who does that? That's just downright dangerous. Yeah, it was. It actually, it cost him his life. I don't know if you've read that part of the Bible. It's talked about in 4 different books. That the first should be last. All these things that are contrary to our world, and that's the only way to victory. Now, people are like, well, I think the world, this is it right now. It could be. I don't know. It's probably as close as I've ever seen it. But regardless of whether Jesus comes back tomorrow or next year or 100 years from now or 1,000 years from now, we should act like he's coming back today, every day anyway, right? And let's just relax a little bit about everything that's happening, and let's focus on what we're supposed to be focusing on, representing him and his kingdom, because in the end, that's what's going to dominate this world. He's going to bring his king to this world and eliminate all that is bad. And we're supposed to do as much of that as we can right here and right now, which is what it means to live the life. That's the mission he's given us. Okay, so, how about you in the way you live, work, and play? Which leads me to the third point. And how do we do this? This is the million-dollar question. How do we live this life on mission? Well, the way we live the life on mission is how you live a missional life is by following a gospel pattern. Now, what's the gospel pattern? It's the way of Jesus, and here's what it looks like. This thing will really sell. Suffering plus death equals life. Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. This has been the way it has always worked. You see, and here's why. What the gospel does, and if you remember nothing else I've said this morning, please, this is good. This is important. The gospel destroys both superiority and inferiority. Now, what do I mean by that? When the gospel has penetrated your life, it destroys superiority. You got nothing to bring to the table. You can't make yourself right with God. You can't be good enough. At the foot of the cross, the ground is level for all of us. I don't care how much you go to church, how much you pray, how you grew up, how bad or good you were. Apart from Jesus Christ, we are all as bad off as we can possibly be. So any sense of superiority over our standing with God or our goodness, it's gone when we look at the cross. So is inferiority. Well, yeah, but I'm not. Oh, yes, you are. God says, you are my child. You are a saint positionally because of what Jesus did for you. His goodness is given to you. So no longer have to feel inferior to those who are, the world says, are superior. You no longer are superior because the world says you're better than those people. It is a level deal. And that's the hope of the gospel. And that's the pattern that we need to go about our mission with. So here's how I want to land this thing. Some of you right now sitting here after 4 weeks of this series are still going, yeah, but man, I don't know if I'm useful to God or not. You know, I mean, I still struggle with these sins and I grew up this way and I'm not that smart. And I mean, I just don't know if I'm useful to God or not. Well, let's go back to verse 1 of Acts chapter 8 and let's settle this once and for all. Saul, who eventually became the Apostle Paul, was one of the witnesses and agreed completely with the killing of Stephen. A great wave of persecution began that day, sweeping over the church in Jerusalem, and all the believers except the apostles were scattered through the regions of Judea and Samaria. Now here's the thing. If the Apostle Paul, who was responsible for the imprisonment and murder of who knows how many Christians, could write half of the New Testament, who do you think you are that you can't be used by God? And is it possible that maybe God called a guy like Paul to be so influential just so people like us would go, wow, maybe he can use me? And here's the irony. This is the irony of God right here. As Paul was out there persecuting and scattering the church and doing everything in his power to destroy the church, what he didn't realize God was doing, according to that Romans 8:28 principle, he was using Paul's murderous threats, imprisonments, executions to build this amazing church that one day Paul would shepherd. Only God could do that. And who would make something like this up? I wouldn't. Nobody'd ever believe it. And yet we're entering into the Advent season, where millions and millions and millions of people around the world will celebrate this crazy, paradoxical movement called Christianity. So if you want to share the hope of the gospel, you need to model your life after the pattern of the gospel. You need to die to yourself for the sake of others. And here's what I'd like to leave you with today, a question. And then we're going to end with a song of worship to remind us of how critically important this mission is. What needs to die in your life in order for Christ to empower you to live on mission? What do you need to just go, take it, God, because it's standing in the way of what you're calling me to do? And we all have something, and sometimes it's a day after day after day battle. But I think it's time we get honest with ourselves and quit making excuses. It's been way too comfortable for us as Christians and as the church in our world to just leave it up to somebody else. But what I want you to maybe experience here as we close is here in Warsaw, Indiana. Now, if you're in from another town visiting with family, when you go back to your community, I would challenge you with the same thing. Those of us who live here, if we don't do it, who will? If we believe we have the hope of the world, in Jesus Christ and he lives in us. We need to share that where we live, work, and play. So let's stand together, close with a time of worship, and I'll come back up and dismiss us in just a few minutes.
You're the God of this city. You're the King of these people. You're the Lord of this nation. Wow. You're the light in this darkness. You're the hope to the hopeless. You're the peace to the restless. You are. There is no one like our God. There is no one like our God. Greater things are yet to come. Greater things are still to be done in this city. Greater things are yet to come. Greater things are still to be done in this city. You're the God of this city. You're the King of these people. You're the Lord of this nation. You are. You're the light in this darkness. You're the hope to the hopeless. You're the peace to the restless. You are. There is no one like our God.
I want to say something really profound, but I don't have anything profound other than there you have it. That's our mission. That's what we're called to. And we can never forget we're part of a global movement that God himself started over 2,000 years ago. And over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be celebrating that. And we know from statistics that the Christmas season is one of the hardest times of year for people. And that's ironic, but it is. So let's share the hope of the gospel where we live, work, and play. Thank you all so much for coming today, and have a great rest of the day. Blessings.